Tata, and opening the sutra.
The Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered even in millions of ages. Now we see it.
So, good morning, everyone. You may recall that last month I gave a talk that was took a bit of its inspiration from one of the tales of the Hasidim. And today we're going to do that again. We're going to begin with probably, I would suspect it's the best known of all of the Hasidic tales. And many of you may have heard this. It's entitled The Treasure. Rabbi Bunim used to tell young men who came to him for the first time the story of Rabbi Isaac, the son of Rabbi Yekel, in Krakow. After many years of great poverty, which had never shaken his faith in God, he dreamed someone bade him to look for a treasure in Prague, under the bridge which leads to the king's palace. When the dream recurred the third time, Rabbi Isaac prepared for the journey and set out for Prague. But the bridge was guarded day and night, and he did not dare to start digging. Nevertheless, he went to the bridge every morning and kept walking around it until evening. Finally, the captain of the guards, who had been watching him, asked in a kindly way whether he was looking for something or waiting for somebody. Rabbi Isaac told him of the dream which had brought him here from a faraway country. The captain laughed. "And so, to please the dream, you poor fellow wore out your shoes to come here? As for having faith in dreams, if I had had it, I should have had to get going when a dream once told me to go to Krakow and dig for treasure under the stove in a room of a Jew, Isaac, the son of Yekel." That was the name, Isaac, son of Yekel. I can just imagine what it would be like, how I should have to try every house over there, where one half of the Jews are named Isaac and the other Yekel. He laughed again. Rabbi Isaac bowed, traveled home, dug up the treasure from under the stove, and built the house of prayer, which is called Reb Isaac's Shul. "Take this story to heart," Rabbi Bunim used to add, "and make what it says your own. There is something you cannot find anywhere in the world, not even at the tzaddik's, and there is nevertheless a place where you can find it. There is something you cannot find anywhere in the world, not even at the tzaddik's." The tzaddik is the term referring to a saintly man, a teacher in the Hasidic culture. "And there is nevertheless a place where you can find it." So who is there that would like to tell me what this something is that you cannot find anywhere in the world? And tell me where you can find it.
Knowing that there's no place like home. and you can make your home anywhere.
At the end. There's no place like home, and you can make your home anywhere. Where is that home? What is that? What is that home?
Within yourself. Your own true nature.
So you can't find that anywhere in the world. And there's a place, where do you find it?
Within yourself.
Within yourself, okay. And is this true, the teachers are useless?
Yep.
Well, we wouldn't have put it so hard.
Not if you would ever pass another koan.
Though apparently Steph-sensei would.
Atadipa, Viharatha, Atasharana, Ananasharana, Dhammadipa, Dhammasharana, Ananasharana. Look within. You are the light itself. Rely on yourself. Do not rely on others. The Dharma is the light. Rely on the Dharma. Do not rely on anything other than the Dharma. This simple teaching is our treasure map and guide. It tells us where the treasure is located and how we can find it. But treasure hunting is, and always has been, a perilous occupation. What I actually want to talk about are some of the perils on the path to this treasure, and what we must have if we are to be successful in the quest. The first of the perils is expecting anything. Of course, we probably wouldn't even start the journey if we didn't expect something. Like the treasure hunters of old, we've seen the manuscripts and heard the tales. How many of you read books on Buddhism that told of great and wondrous experience before you launched on your journey? However, these experiences are rare, and even when they do occur, they don't appear when we expect them, and they are rarely even remotely like their descriptions. Whatever you expected won't happen. This is a peril, because our years of practice cannot be sustained by empty expectations. Practice is simple, but keeping our practice strong over the years is difficult. At times we grow bored, at other times we're frustrated by what we perceive as a lack of progress. And when, because we have expectations, we believe that we are stuck, when we don't see changes happening, it's easy to give up. Whenever we do think we've progressed, we encounter the second peril, attaining anything. In one sense, we cannot attain anything. We are already complete and perfect. In another sense, we cannot attain anything. Whatever is realized is not realized by us. As soon as we try to grasp and objectify it as a possession of our own ego self, it evaporates. You are not it. It surely is you, as the song of the jewel mirror of awareness tells us. We are ordinary human beings at the beginning of this process, and we are ordinary human beings at the end. In fact, we are even more ordinary. Just thus, nothing is attained. Knowing anything is the next peril. Whatever we think we know will eventually stand in our way. Knowing locks the entire miraculous universe into the tiny prison of our intellect. What we think we know becomes something that we grasp and hold tenaciously. I am right, you are wrong. I am a Buddhist, a Democrat, a vegetarian, an environmentalist, a pacifist, and I am right. Ultimately, all of our views are mistaken and will trip us up in our practice. Again, Dongshan Lienji reminds us that it does not come by knowing, nor does it involve ideas. When we think we know, when we think we have attained, we are in peril of falling into the realm of the heavenly beings. Heavenly beings are a Buddhist psychological archetype. And heavenly beings are sure that they are right, that they are pure, and that they are holier than others. They have the right thoughts, eat the right foods, and have attained a peaceful, beatific state where they love everyone and everything, and most especially themselves. Once we are caught here in this state of narcissism, it's nearly impossible to extract ourselves. And so we see that the greatest peril is holding on to anything. Whatever it is, ideas, views, desires, attachments, we must let go. Over and over, we must let go until we can practice as though a fool, like an idiot. How do we practice like a fool? We just practice without expecting anything, attaining anything, or knowing anything. Each breath just follows the next. Whatever comes up must be let go of. If the Buddha appears before us, we must let go. If the devil appears before us, we must let go. It is always just thus. Failing to do that, we build a wall for ourselves that is so high that we can never get over. So, if we're to avoid these perils in our practice, how do we go forward? Is there anything we should carry on this journey? The first thing we must have is a tiny modicum of faith. That faith is simply the intuition, lightly held, that this practice is worth doing. In time, that will be strengthened as we see the Dharma working in our lives. But initially, we must be willing to trust the teachings and our teachers, returning time and time again to sit, chant, and hear the Dharma. The second thing that must be built into our practice is patience. Zen is a lifetime practice, and there is no such thing as mastery. There are some milestones along the way, the various empowerments such as Jukai and Tokudo. However, if we are practicing, not attaining, and not holding on, these should fade quickly. Yes, it feels really good initially. We feel special the first time we sit down with our roksu or our robe. But in time we must release it. It's just another thing. And the sweet rhythm of just practicing returns. Self-acceptance is another key to our life of practice. At some level, we need to accept that we are okay just as we are. Worthiness does not lie around the bend. Our efforts will be futile if we chase the next koan, the next empowerment, hoping that it will make us whole. We are whole right now. We are perfect and complete. That is how we should practice. As Dogen Zenji says, we practice because we are already enlightened. As we fill our backpacks for this journey, determination is another quality we should have with us. There are inevitably times when we are tired, when we are bored, when we are frustrated, when the demands of our lives pull us away from practice. These will come and go continually over the years. Perhaps there may be a period of time when we can't make it to the Zendo. We need the determination to keep the thread of our practice intact through it all. Every moment of our lives is an opportunity for practice. There is no place where Zen cannot accompany us. Finally, we need thirst. Think about thirsting for water on a hot summer day. We raise the pitcher to our lips and feel the coolness of the liquid sliding down our throats. So too with Zen, each drink brings us a certain coolness to our being. We thirst and we are satisfied. We practice, we live our lives, and it is just thus. So please, are there any thoughts or questions or concerns?
Great talk. Just what the doctor ordered.
Dr. Who or Dr. Seuss, maybe?
I want to say thank you to everyone. I felt at the beginning of the year, I felt like I needed to give myself a little push, and I decided I would do the 108 days of at least commit to do at least an hour a day, because I was getting intermittent. And so I've been doing that, but some days at home, it's really hard and especially there's been a lot going on with our family and stuff. So, but then I come here and it's I won't say it's easy, but there's so much energy and so much support here, and the difference between sitting at home and toughing it out and sitting here is really phenomenal. So I just want to say thank you to everybody.
What's the 108 days?
Well, I noticed in looking around that some sanghas were doing that, and they were starting like the first of the year or January 2nd or something. And I don't know what the particular significance, but I think it's kind of a way to reinvigorate people and get people more focused. But so what's today? Today's day 72 or something. I don't know. I'm ticking them off each day. But at this point, I feel like when I get to 109, why stop? I mean, 108 doesn't mean anything. So, but there are days when it is tough.
And you're talking about meditating every day for 108 days, or?
Yeah, to making sure it's an hour, and
wow.
You know, when there's a, I don't know, for me anyway, when I have a goal, I'm not gonna not do it. I'm not gonna, you know, if it's been like 50 minutes or 55 minutes, I'm gonna give it that extra 5 minutes because that's what I said I'd do. So, you know, and sometimes that last few minutes is like, ah. Can I just check it off anyway? No, then why would I do that? So
you don't get to take St. Patrick's Day off.
I don't think so.
I've also found that when I set out to do something in particular, like a duration of doing zazen, there are circumstances where the best thing I can do is give myself permission to let it go and attend to something that needs to be attended to. So I think there's also something to be said for taking care of yourself and your family and whatever. And sometimes there are times when not keeping to the letter of the law is the best thing to do.
I've found that to be true too. I try almost every day to do a 20 or 25 minute Zen service and 20 minutes of meditation and another half an hour of yoga. But I was very anal retentive about doing that for a long time, months and months and months. And then finally I decided that occasionally I could show myself some mercy and that perhaps holding it a little lightly might be better. So now I give myself permission to miss the occasional Sunday or Monday or whatever. Sometimes you can almost be too religious about it.
Well, maybe that's what happens on day 109.
Yeah, I'm anticipating that.
Did you buy that chocolate?
Did I what?
Did you buy that chocolate?
Chocolate?
Yeah.
Which chocolate?
That you were looking at the store and worrying about.
No, I bought the little energy bars.
Not the chocolate.
This had carob in it. It wasn't quite the same thing.
I bought the chocolate.
I knew you would.
Well, I think that comes back to, you know, the different, that comes back to what you were talking about is, a part of what you were talking about is that there's rhythms and ebb and flow, and sometimes it's one thing and sometimes another thing, and it's sometimes, you know, you have to listen to what you need at that time, and it's not always the same thing. So
I like the idea of keep meditating even when you think you're not attaining anything, like even when you get bored with it. Like maybe yeah.
Let me warn you, those who are relatively new to this practice, there will be long stretches of being bored with it. Mm-hmm. And it's most, I've found the most helpful thing is to really sit through those things.
So that German word, Sitzfleisch or something like that? Sitzfleisch? The ability to sit there?
Fleisch means meat, or
yeah,
flesh.
You keep your butt sitting.
Keep your butt sitting.
My dearest friend who died always said that.
Maybe it's Yiddish.
My grandmother used to say, she was speaking about academic learning, but I think it really applies to Zen. She says, it's not with the cup, it's with the tuchus.
Yes.
I think the important thing is just to keep plowing ahead. Sometimes I think the problem with, in my case, with having a daily practice and trying to maintain it, is that then you feel if the one day that you don't do it, that, oh, the whole thing's gone to hell. and you know, why bother from now on? You know, I mean, I've already missed a day for, you know, why bother? But what I've learned is I just say, okay, so I didn't do it today, but I can do it tomorrow. And then you're right back doing it again. And if you... you just have to get through that. Oh, I've lost all hope because I'm not perfect.
My dad always says, "Put some bones in your butt." So that goes with the German saying. And then there's the zazen or meditation that you take with you that you do every moment. Mm-hmm.
Without that rhythm, I'd feel like a fish on shore, just like flopping around in the sand. And that's kind of how it's been for a little while, but it's nice to hear that, you know, sometimes that's how it'll be.
But then the tide will come in and you'll be back in the water, see?
This is one last, that treasure thing. Sometimes the treasure doesn't look like a treasure either. Sometimes it's not. There's nothing gold about it.
Raw diamonds look just like rocks, I understand.
Before finishing, it's been nice to have Lindsay with us this week. She'll be leaving tomorrow, going back to Virginia. And we wish you well. Do you have any questions? Or?
No, I just want to say thank you to all of you. It's really helped having a group of people all doing the same thing that I think I'm trying to do.
And next Saturday will be an intensive, so we'll begin sitting at 6 in the morning and finishing at noon. I assume somebody's going to take care of breakfast. Is that you, Kyle?
Yeah, sure.
Also, possibly next week, we got an email from somebody who wants to do a personal retreat coming up from New Hampshire, and he's got till the 22nd spring break. So I said, well, come on. He asked, do you have a hut available? So I said, yeah, we've got one ready on Sunday. And so he may come up tomorrow, the next day. I haven't heard back.
Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless.